So today we're going to be looking at Psalm 121. Psalm 121 says this: I will raise my eyes to the mountains. From where will my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Behold, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your protector. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun will not beat down on you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will protect you from all evil. He will keep your soul. The Lord will guard your going out and your coming in from this time and forever. So when we see this passage, this is one of those passages that, if we're not careful, could possibly fall into the category of being somewhat what some may say. I'm not an advocate for this, but some may say, and at times anybody could say, maybe at times myself could say, that's somewhat unrealistic. Because what is being stated here about God is very clear, that God is going to be your helper. God is going to protect you. You're never going to have any hardship. And if we misinterpret this, if we're not careful and we misinterpret it, we start to believe that, okay, then if that's true, that God is going to be my helper and there's never going to be any hardship, then there's never going to be anything that goes wrong in my life. There's never going to be any trials. There's never going to be any situations that I face that I don't want to face. Everything's just going to go smooth, right? Isn't that the way your life has gone? Hasn't your life just gone smooth? No issues, never. I mean, every single day, it's just been amazing. You haven't faced one situation or one issue that you didn't want to face or that you didn't want know how to deal with it. It's just been completely smooth. It's been absolutely amazing. Everything's just been great. Life is great. And it has to be, because when we ask you on Sunday, how are you doing? That's usually the answer we get, right? And that's usually the answer we give too, right? No matter what's happening, our life could be in complete shambles. How are you doing? Oh, things are good. Yeah, but your life's in complete shambles. Yeah, things are good. So we need to be careful about misinterpreting Scripture, that we think that for serving God means there's not going to be any problems and everything's going to be great and our life's going to be tremendous and we're going to be a millionaire and we're never going to have any problems, no issues, and all of that. We have to be careful from that. So when he says this, I want to go through this about what the psalmist is getting at here. The first thing he says is, I will raise my eyes to the mountains. From where will my help come? So the whole idea of help, okay? Has anybody here ever asked anybody for help? Show of hands, please. Okay, yes, there we go. All across the congregation. I was about ready to say I'm going to have to preach on lying here in a second. So we've all asked somebody for help at some times in our life. Is there anybody here who doesn't like asking somebody for help? Yeah, that's the majority of us as well. We don't like asking for help because we don't like to admit that we need help, because we believe that we can be independent, we can take care of things on our own, right? So the idea of help is, he's assuming here, of course, that we need help. The psalmist is assuming that you are going to need help, because he's saying that he needs help. This isn't a matter of if you need help. It's a matter of the fact that you do need help. All of us need help. Whether you like to hear that or not, you need help. Everybody, every single one of us need help. And there's going to be several times in our life where we ask for help, several times in our life where we call out to others for help, several times in our life we need help to get through a situation, right? That's what we need. At the very beginning of this, though, he says, I will raise my eyes to the mountains. Interesting why he uses mountains there. Mountains is this imagery that he's using, especially in their culture at the time. Mountains was a display of strength. It was a display of power. It was a display of amazing ability, was mountains. Because you remember Jesus used this term. He said, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you will be able to say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Why did he use mountains? Well, because mountains are a big deal. Like, who can move a mountain? Right? We've seen people in some ways move part of mountains or go through mountains in order to make roads or bridges, and they do that very quickly, don't they? It never takes them a long time, right? Yeah, usually It takes a very long time. The road's closed. This is happening, and they have to go through, and finally they get there. A mountain. So the mountain is a display of strength. It's a display of power. And so what he's saying is, he's saying that I look up to the mountains, but even bigger and stronger than the mountains is my God. Because in their culture, at their time at least, and probably in ours as well, if we would like to get off our technology and realize that what mountains are, that there really isn't anything more powerful than a mountain or stronger than a mountain. It's very strong. You can't do it. And if you think you can go out and move a mountain, go try. Go try to push a mountain, see how far you can get. I remember as a kid, we would play King of the Mountain. Yes, we would play King of the Mountain. And of course, that one I would always lose and everything, but it was just the idea that, you know, if you're the king of the mountain, you're standing on top of the mountain, and then what happens is somebody comes and they knock you over, and if they knock you over, then they're the king, and they get to stand until somebody knocks them over, and so the whole time, everybody's trying to knock somebody off of the mountain, and do you know when we did that, the mountain never moved. The mountain was just something we knew that was always going to be there, and that's what he said. Mountain's always going to be there. It's what's strong, but even bigger than that is God. Now, he continues on. He says, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Now, that should be enough right there, shouldn't it? We should just stop right there. Why do you have any other issue? If he made heaven and earth, then he's the one that we should submit to, right? Then that must mean that he's God. If he made heaven and earth, then that must mean that he's the one that we should call on for, as the psalmist is saying, that we should call on for help, because he's the one that created all of this. Why is that so important? Because nobody else can do that. Nobody else can create. It's only God that can create. You can't create. All we can do as mankind is, all we do is take pieces of what God has already created, and we make it into something, but we don't create. All of that came from God. What is the idea of creation? Creation is taking something that is nothing and making something. None of us can do that. You can't take nothing and make something out of it. That's what God can do. That's what he did. So he's the maker of heaven and earth, so that's why we go to him. He will not allow your foot to slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Man, that's interesting, isn't it? This is where it's careful to be unrealistic. What does he mean by foot to slip? And does that mean that we're never going to make mistakes? Does that mean that things never are going to go wrong? That I'm always going to be perfect because he's not going to allow that? We'll talk about that in a minute. But he says, but he who watches over you will not slumber. Think about that. God who watches over you, he doesn't sleep. He's not somebody that you have to worry about. Man, I hope he's not busy. I'm trying to get a hold of him now. I hope he answers. I hope he checks his voicemail. I sent him an email. If anybody needs God's email address, we have a special email address that only the office can use. Deb knows what it is. Like I said, if you need anything, ask Deb. So we email God all the time. At least we try to. All right, so he will not slumber. It's not difficult to get a hold of him. Behold, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. So he's letting them know again, God does not sleep. The Lord is your protector. Hey, great job. I didn't have to say next slide. They just went right there. That was amazing. The Lord is your protector. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun will not beat down on you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will protect you from all evil. Is that realistic? Is the psalmist messing up here? What's going on? He'll protect you from all evil. He will keep your soul. The Lord will guard your going out and your coming in from this time and forever. So what the concepts that we get from this psalmist so far is that God is bigger than mountains. He's the one that we go to for help. There is nobody else. He's the one who created everything. He's the source of everything, which is why we should go to him. And he does not sleep. We don't have to worry about if he's available or if he's not or if he's going to respond or whatever. God is something beyond what we could ever understand or imagine. Now, the unrealistic part can be where we start to think that, well, okay, according to this, he's never going to let my foot slip, which means I'm never going to do anything wrong once I come to Christ. How many people here would you say have come to Christ, and How many of you would say your foot has slipped maybe once? Twice? There was that one time. So exactly what is this, what is he getting at? Well, and we get to this whole idea, and this is one of the issues with Christianity, where we get to this of what exactly is it, does it mean God is my help and God is there all the time? Then if that's true, then at times, let's be honest, at times life's just a mess. Remember my first church? See, I can tell stories about my first church because that was a long time ago. My first church, we had a staff issue and had two adults in my office, and they were going at each other in my office. And here I was, 25 years old, right out of school. I knew theology. I knew nothing about what is going on, right? And the one told the other, you just need to give it to Christ. Whatever they were talking, I forget what exactly it was, but there were some kind of conflict they were coming. And she just came right back at her and said, well, why doesn't he help me? You ever said that? You ever thought that? God, where are you? If everything that we read right here is true, then why aren't you helping? Because right now, God, it doesn't seem like you are. I mean, you helped other people. Why aren't you helping me? I don't understand what's going on, God, and why doesn't he help me? Why doesn't he do something? So we go to the New Testament, as we always do, and I have this to read for you. I don't have it there behind me, but going to the New Testament, Hebrews 13 kind of gives us a little idea about this, because the New Testament always completes these thoughts. But he says this, he says, let love of the brethren continue. That's the first thing he gives them in Hebrews chapter 13. Now this will make sense in a moment, but he says, let love of the brethren continue. So in other words, the writer of Hebrews is saying, continue to love one another. Let love continue. Isn't it great that the verbiage that he's using there, and it's true in the Greek text, that you allow love to continue. You don't force yourself to love somebody else if you're following Jesus. You just get out of the way and let it go, right? You allow the love to continue. So you let love of the brethren continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember the prisoners, as though in prison with them, and those who are ill-treated, since you yourselves are in the body. Marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled, for fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. Now, everything he's talking about there, love of the brethren, hospitality, put yourself in the position of the prisoner, be compassionate, then the marriage bed to be kept pure because God will judge the fornicators and the adulterers. Man, there's a message for today, isn't it? Wow. Marriage bed to be kept pure. God will judge the fornicators and adulterers. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. Now you say, what in the world does that have to do with this psalm? I thought we were talking about God helping me. What does that have? I didn't hear anything in that Hebrews about God helping me. Well, look at how he concludes it in verse 6. Right then he says, if at the end of verse 5, he says, make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. Now, why would the writer of Hebrews talk about love, hospitality, compassion, the marriage bed, the love of money? And he says, here's the reason why, for he has said, I will never leave you. So the first thing we could understand there is that first of all, we really need to understand that the whole idea of God's help isn't just the idea that God's going to do something and he's going to do it and that's it. It's the idea that, yeah, but following Jesus also requires love. It also requires the compassion. It also requires the marriage bed to be kept pure. Also requires the love, not to fall into the love of money. And to realize that there's somebody else involved in what's happening in your life, which is the reminder that he's giving you today, that he says here today, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. And then verse 6, so that we confidently say, he's actually quoting Isaiah here, which is a mirror of Psalm 121, where he says, so that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid, what can man do to me? Let me say that again. I'm sure you heard it before, but it's worth repeating. The Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? And he's saying that all in the context of let the love continue, marriage bed be kept pure, love of money. Why? Because the Lord is my helper. That's all I need. What can man do? So the way that that completes the idea of the psalm is a whole idea where he says that his foot will not slip. Well, that falls into the category of what can man do to me? Because usually what happens is somehow the only reason that we slip and the only reason that we fall, the only reason we mess up, as we talked at the 9 o'clock hour about this, is that we fall into temptation. We fall into temptation. And it's a horrible thing when we fall into temptation, isn't it? Usually we don't enjoy it, and usually after the fact we regret it. That's why the Apostle Paul said the pleasure of sin is very short, which we all have learned, I'm sure. For some reason, though, it's very appealing in the moment, it's very appealing at the time, and man, we'd go right into it, and then afterwards, what did I do? I regret the whole thing. Why in the world did I do that? That doesn't make any sense. The pleasure of sin is very short. It doesn't last. And so it's the idea of falling into temptation. And going back to 1 Corinthians 10:13, one of my favorite verses that I'm perfect at living up to it, but my goodness, the verse itself just comes right out and just nails you when he says that you will not be tempted beyond what you can bear. Wow. Have you heard that anywhere in our world today? God will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. I don't hear that anywhere. I mean, other than faith journeys. But as far as the secular media, I don't hear that at all. All I hear is the complete opposite. Well, what else did you expect them to do? They were surrounded by that. I mean, if you were in the same position, you would fall and do the same thing. Come on. But he says there's no temptation that's going to be beyond what you can bear. And God is faithful. He will not let this happen. But he said, even if you do, even if you're in a situation that you just cannot bear, he says, God will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. So the whole idea of temptation is that, first of all, God's not going to put you in a position that it's too hard for you to bear. But if that does happen to happen, even though he said it won't, but if you, for some reason, you think it happened, he's also going to provide a way out so that you can stand up under it, which means there's absolutely no excuse for giving into temptation, because it's not what you can't bear, and he's going to provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. That's what the temptation is. And so what happens is God won't let that happen. God won't let that take place. God will do everything possible to keep our foot where it belongs. But we're the ones that might mess that up. Why? Because as Paul said to the church at Corinth, he's the one that's providing a way out. So if I fall into temptation, it's not God's fault. If I fall into temptation, it's not even the devil's fault. God provided a way out and I didn't take it. So think about it just for a moment. Stay on the subject of temptation just for a moment. This isn't fun to think about. And I understand that. And I don't know when it was in your life, but the last time in your life that you believe that you fell into temptation, whatever it might have been, maybe it was last year, maybe it was 10 years ago, maybe it was 50, or whatever it might be, it doesn't matter. Just in your mind, the last time, and I want you just to think what that situation was and what way did God provide out that you didn't take? I would venture to say that there were probably multiple ways that he provided out that you could have taken, but you didn't. And as a result, you fell into whatever that temptation was. We're not talking about one specific thing, just one thing against God. Whatever it was that you knew that God didn't want you to do, and you did it anyway, even though he provided a way out. So back to the idea of that he's saying here in Hebrews, When he's doing this here at Hebrews, and he's giving the list of let the love continue amongst the brother, the hospitality, the empathy for the prisoners, that the marriage bed be kept pure, and then the love of money, don't get caught up in the love of money. Why shouldn't I give into this, God? Everybody else is. Why shouldn't I give into the love of money? Why shouldn't I give into the lust? Why shouldn't I give into this? Why shouldn't I give into the hate? The whole world is. Everybody else is. Why shouldn't I do this? He says it very clearly where he echoes the Psalms and he says, because he said, I will never leave you nor desert you, nor will I forsake you. In other words, your relationship with Christ is more important than everything else I just listed. Your relationship with Christ is more important than the hate. It's more important than money. It's more important than adultery. It's more important than fornicating. It's more important than sexual immorality. It's more important than lust. It's more important than your temper. It's more important than all the things that could possibly fall into the category that are displeasing to God. Your relationship with Christ is more important, because that's why he said, keep doing this, keep doing this, don't do that. Keep doing this, God's gonna judge that. Don't do this. Why? Because he promised he'll never leave you nor forsake you. And then he echoes the Psalms in verse 6 where he says, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can man do? So we take that back to the psalm. And when we go back to the psalm, what we see is, I look up, I raise my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? God is stronger than any mountain. And nobody can move a mountain. They're the strongest thing we have. But God is stronger than any mountain, because he's the one that made the mountain. He created heaven and earth, and he does not sleep. And he's always there for you. Reminders are a very interesting thing. Has anybody here ever left your home and forgot something? And depending on what it was, when it dawns on you that you forgot, you usually try to process or think about, how could I possibly adapt the situation so I don't have to go back? If you're anything like me, I could just be two blocks from the house and I don't want to go back. Because then I'll be late, and then this happens, and this, I think, oh, I forgot. Maybe I could adapt this. Maybe I could do this. Maybe I could change this. Well, years ago, we're talking years ago here, years ago, and I'm sure Miranda forgot about this by now, so years ago, she's forgiven me and forgotten, and it's all done. It's all water under the bridge. You know, it's all good. It's all nothing that needs to come up again at all, but I'll use it as an illustration anyway. But years ago, and in fact, I've had people, relatives, who've actually said to me when they've heard stories about some of the things, faux pas I've had with Miranda, they're like, oh, we're surprised you're still living. But this one wasn't horrific, but it was bad, but it wasn't bad, but it was pretty bad. I guess it was bad. So we're in evangelism, and I'm traveling, and And I had to drive to Illinois. I was going to be preaching a revival in Illinois by myself. The family wasn't coming with me. The family stayed behind. And so I was driving by myself. And so I loaded everything up. And it was early in the morning I left. Everybody was still asleep early in the morning. And I drove off. And I was about halfway there. And I stopped at a gas station. Then it dawned on me. Why do I have two sets of keys? Yeah, you know where this is going, right? How did that? And then I look at it and I was like, well, that's mine, and that's whose is. These aren't mine. I'm going to be gone for a week. Looking at the clock, I'm supposed to be there to preach in just an hour. So I call her. You know that typical call, right? Anybody here ever made that call or had that communication? So how you doing? I'm fine. How are you? Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, you know, nice weather. Going to get ready to preach here in about an hour. Everything's going good. You know, something funny happened. And I mean, you know, it's not that big a deal, but I'll go ahead and tell you anyway. I kind of have your keys. And she was like, what? I don't know how it happened. Somehow I ended up, and when I grabbed my set of keys, somehow I ended up with both sets. And immediately the tone of the conversation kind of changed. It kind of got to more of a, there was more of a serious, there wasn't much of a hey, how's it going kind of thing. It was more of a, okay, so Chad, what am I supposed to do? What are you telling me to do? And I said, well, as far as the house goes, we do have a spare one. You know where that spare is, right? And yes. It's like, but what about my car? There's a spare somewhere, right? And now, the interesting thing about this whole thing is that eventually we made it through. She can tell you the rest of the story. I won't bore you with the rest of it because it's not worth it to go in the rest of it. But the reason that that happens, at least in my life, the reason mistakes happen like that is that I don't know why, but I always turn down reminders even when I know I'm going to need them or even though I needed them in the past. Make sure you don't forget this. I won't forget that. Why do you keep telling me? Stop telling me. I'm never going to forget. You know me. I'm not going to forget that. I got this. For some reason, we kind of do that. Now, I'm not the only one, right? Please tell me I'm not the only one. Maybe I'm the only one that went that far, but I'm not the only one that kind of blows off reminders as it's no big deal. Yeah, I'll get that. I got it. You don't need to write it down. I don't write stuff down. I'll remember it. It's fine. And then the day comes. I forgot. When did I? So we need to be reminded, right? Are you somebody that needs to be reminded? Yes or no? Nod your heads if you're somebody that needs to be reminded. Okay, honesty and transparency going through all the way. We all need to be reminded. We especially need to be reminded of things about God and about Christ and about his word because we easily forget. This is something we easily forget, is that Jesus Christ promised he would never leave us. And that Jesus Christ promised he would be our helper, especially in our time of need. And that Jesus Christ promised we did not have to fall into the temptations of the world because he promised us he would never depart. How often do we need to be reminded of that? Or put it another way, how often have you forgotten that? How much does it take for you to forget about a truth that you already know to be true? You know it's true. I mean, if I was to take a vote, say, do you believe Jesus is with us all the time? I would say majority of you at least would say, yeah, sure, he is. Yes, yes, yes. But it doesn't take much, does it? All of a sudden, wonder, God, where are you? God, I don't feel you as close as I did before. God, I'm facing this situation I didn't even expect. God, why would you let this happen? And we need to be reminded he's still there. He didn't go anywhere. In fact, he's just as close to you now as he was before. You don't need to give in to any temptation. Don't do that because of it. Jesus is there. He's your helper. He's the one bigger than a mountain. He's the one who is there. And I just wonder how many are here this morning. You just need that reminder right now, right in this very second of your life. You need that reminder that he has not left you, that he is still there. How many of you are facing something you did not expect to face? How many of you are going through something you don't want to go through? How many of you right now in your life are looking back 10 years before now? You never once thought your life would be where it is right now. You just need him to remind you today. He didn't go anywhere. He's still there. At Vacation Bible School this year, I know some of you were here, but Jen always asked me to do the closing every night of Vacation Bible School. And I always try to have a lot of fun with that, and sometimes I might get the kids probably too loud, because usually when I do it, I always see the adults always holding their ears because I get them going. But at Roxbury Holiness Camp, they have this pavilion that the kids used to meet in, and I didn't know about it before I went in, but they had me speak to the kids one time, and I always want to get the kids screaming, but they always said, you never want the kids screaming in there because it's just way too loud. People are going to have hearing issues because of it, because of the acoustics. And I just went in, and the first devotional I did was the whole sand and rock and the storm, and I had all the kids going making storms, and all the adults are almost running out of the building because I had them going getting too loud. That's what I do with VBS as well. I want to get, because I like to engage. I like to get the kids excited. I like to get them to scream, yell, whatever, because kids like to yell. They like to scream and like to do that. But this time, there was one that I did that it was an idea that you tied a balloon around your wrist, and this balloon represented Christ. And no matter what I did, I couldn't get rid of Christ. So if I wanted to go over here and do this, Christ will never see it. And then I reach for it, and there he is. And I smack the balloon away, and I can't get it away. I wrestle with the balloon. I tried to stomp on the balloon, everything possible. I couldn't get it. No matter what I did, I couldn't get away from Christ. He was always there. No matter what, I couldn't get away. I tried to walk out the door. The kids are all laughing. But the whole message is, Christ is tied around your wrist, man. You can't get rid of him. Even if you wanted to get rid of him, you can't get rid of him. He's there. And that's the message for all of us. Wouldn't it be great if we would get by with it, we would do it. Wouldn't it be great if we did that for all of you? All of us will walk out of here today with a balloon tied around our wrist, and we're not allowed to take it off, just to remind us that he's always there. So we can't do that today, but I want you to imagine that. I hope that gives you a good picture to imagine in your life that Jesus is always there and he has never left, regardless of the situation that you're going through, regardless of what you're facing. He has never left. He is your helper. He's bigger than any mountain. Lord Jesus, we thank you today for your word and for your truth, for everything you mean to us. And Lord, we thank you today for the reminder that you have never left. You are our helper. There is no other than you. Lord, forgive us for all the times that we have forgotten that truth. And even in this moment, Jesus, there may be some, a few, a lot here that maybe even in this moment, currently, presently, that may need to say, Jesus, forgive me, because I forgot about that. I need to be reminded of that truth. And so, Jesus, as we always pray, would you reveal yourself to each of us right now? we've never seen you before. Would you speak to us, Lord, in a way we have never heard you speak before? And may we never forget that you are always there. And we ask all these things in your name, in the name of Jesus.